Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to Frank Film Club, the club for lovers and makers of film. I'm Maisie Williams, I am an actor and producer.
I'm Lowry Roberts, and I'm a filmmaker and producer.
Hello, I'm Hannah Williams, and I am a casting director.
And welcome to our club. Take one. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Frank Film Club. Today, we are going to be talking about the comedy thriller called Fresh, which came out this year on Disney Plus. It was directed by Mimi Cave, and it's her directorial debut. But before we get into all of that, how you guys been?
Been good, thanks. Yeah, it was good to see you both on the weekend.
It was.
Yeah, that was so lovely.
Really good. I feel a bit tired. I've been doing events with you both. And really enjoying being in the room with some filmmakers. We were at Girls in Film Festival this weekend, and we had a chat with some wonderful women about filmmaking, and then we had a screening at the Mondrian Hotel, and it's just been really lovely to do physical things in person. Like, it's not just us sat here in our offices.
Yeah, it's been a bit mad, although when we finished work on Monday, I thought it was Friday.
Yeah.
So this week, as much as it's been great, it's also been really long.
I feel like there's something about a Friday feeling in the middle of the week that like feels like your heart should plummet afterwards. But then you're like, maybe it's good that I have a Friday feeling right now.
As long as you don't have a dip afterwards, if you can just ride that high or just appreciate the high for what it is and then just go back to a normal level. But I think the problem is when you have a little dip.
Well, I'm glad that you guys have been well, and I'm glad that we could come and chat about our final film of the series, Fresh. So for everyone listening, the film came out this year, as I said, on Disney Plus, so you can watch it there. It stars Daisy Edgar-Jones and Sebastian Stan, and it follows Daisy's character, Noah, as she navigates online dating and encounters this strange man, Steve. And the rest is just a tumbling, gory mess. Wait, that makes it sound bad. It's not bad. It's amazing. It was written by Lauren Kahn, and it premiered this year at Sundance Film Festival. So, what did you guys think?
Well, me and Nari watched this one together, which is a treat. And we watched it after the Girls in Film talk. And by that point, we were really tired. And actually, I was like, oh gosh, I just kind of want to go to bed. But I was so glad that we did not. And we watched the film. I thought it was so entertaining. I really enjoyed it. I didn't know anything about it before we watched it. And I think that was a good thing, actually, because on face value, I don't think this would be something I'd be interested in. But I thought it was really, really enjoyable watch.
Yeah, I totally agree. Was equally tired and not really in the mood for a film. But as soon as it was on, I was hooked and I was like leaning my face in to get a better look, which sometimes actually was not a good idea. And we'll get to that later. I actually really love this film. I thought it was brilliant and so stylish. The music in it was great. The acting is incredible. And I'm really excited to speak to Daisy later.
Well, I'm glad that you both really enjoyed it. I discovered this film through seeing stills and clips from it online and just like could not get the visual identity out of my head. I just thought it was so enticing. And I roughly knew the premise. I knew that there was like a little bit of kind of cannibalism. And so I knew it would be kind of like a thriller horror. And that's obviously something that I really, really love. And then when I watched it, I think because I had this expectation, perhaps, I maybe didn't love it as much as I wanted to, but I loved all of the parts of it that I thought I was going to, you know, from the outside, kind of. But there was nothing more that I kind of, like, found in there. But I guess, like, I would be interested to know from you guys, like, what are your favorite parts? Then we've got, like, you know, this story kind of surrounding online dating, around, like, these metaphors for toxic relationships. But then you also have these incredible friendships that kind of, like, are sprinkled throughout. So, yeah, what did you enjoy about it?
I had no expectations of what this was going to be, and so I was, like, really pleasantly surprised. And especially, I think, because maybe it was on Disney as well, I was like, I don't know what the tone of this is going to be. And then you've got that on the opposite side. My favourite parts were definitely about date culture, because, yeah, know it. And yeah, the friendships, and just little things, little details in the friendship that I really liked and felt really real to me, like a really good representation of what it's like to be really close to someone, I think. So yeah, those are my favorite parts, I think.
Yeah, agree. I understand. I feel like I've had that before, Maze, when you have such high hopes for a film that, like, anything that happens with the film is, like, never going to meet your expectations. So I'm really glad that I had no idea what this film was before watching it. And now I'm, like, kind of want to encourage all listeners to, like, stop listening and go watch it and then come and listen.
Stop listening to this podcast.
Right, stop listening.
It's interesting though, isn't it? I think, like, some, you know, we do these massive press tours now, and, like, everything needs to be on social media. It needs to be on, you know, mainstream news channels. It needs to be, like, on YouTube, like, you know, all kinds of buzz around something. And, you know, we've all had it in other films where we know nothing about it before we go into it. And I think sometimes that expectation, it can be kind of damaging to your experience of watching something. But it can also go the other way. It's just, yeah, it really depends on your own taste and such.
Well, it's funny because with the trailer for this, basically after watching it, I was trying to explain it to Tamara, who we work with, and suddenly realized, wait, how much am I meant to be saying? Like, how much did the trailer give away? Like, what has their marketing strategy been? And actually, in the trailer that I watched, they don't give any of that away, and it only seems like it's about dating, and then they don't give any of the meat stuff away. And so I found that really interesting that they decided not to do that, which is probably a good thing. But yeah, it's funny how you have to, that's like the bulk of the film.
I haven't even seen the trailer. So what was your expectation of it, Maze?
Well, what it is, you know, the bit where they're dancing together, that has gone viral on TikTok, and it feels really good to do. Yeah. And then all of the comments always say, yeah, everyone's freaking out about this dancing scene, but what about what happens just before it / just after it? And so for me, I don't know how I knew, and then when I was watching it, I was like, oh man, that's kind of messed up. But also something that I thought before I watched it, you know, there's that piece of artwork that he lifts up to reveal, like, belongings of his victims. I thought that that piece of artwork was made of human skin.
So did I.
But I don't know where I got that from. Is that, I think it probably is insinuated that it's supposed to be. Or maybe it's just our twisted minds.
I think it's probably our twisted minds.
Yeah.
But but it did, like, when you first see that painting, it does make you feel like, oh my God, shit has gone on with that painting. But I actually don't think that it was human skin in the end. It was more just what was behind it.
She just lingers a little bit too long on, like, one of the strokes. And I think it was meant to feel suggestive.
So I guess it's kind of marketed in a similar way to, like, Promising Young Woman or something like that, where I guess you kind of see what's happening in that, but it's like you don't really see the full extent of it in their marketing. So I want to get into this friendship, because to me, it felt a little bit like Molly's sole purpose in life and her only ambition is to know where her friend has gone, which I guess is all consuming in a way. But I didn't feel like there was much more than that. And yeah, I think that it's a lovely friendship, of course, but it did, with all of the leading characters being white and all of the supporting characters being people of colour, it felt like there needed to be a little bit more character development for those people, because it just felt a little bit tokened them in a way.
Yeah, you don't learn anything about Molly or her ex-boyfriend at all. When I say about her friendship, I think it's like performance-based things. Like the silly voices that they do with each other, the way they say goodbye on the phone, small note. And like that felt a lot more realistic to like how I speak with my friends. But no, you're right. We don't know anything about Molly, and we don't know anything about, is it Paul that plays the ex-boyfriend?
I suppose Steve only brings in women with no family, and yet he does bring in Molly. And I know that's because like she's gone out to try find him, but then really, well, wouldn't her family and her friends then try to find her? And I know the boyfriend came, so yeah, completely get that. Yeah.
And I think like something that was just like flawless throughout this were the performances. And I think that everyone, you know, just, I'm really looking forward to chatting with Daisy actually about, you know, how they collaborated as a cast, because I think that the performances are really, really strong. But maybe it's just a couple of little cues around the, like, you know, the writing or the story development or the character development. But I think, you know, what Jojo did with what she was given was like, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's like a really bigger conversation about casting in general as well. It's like, really, there are not that many key cast here. And where do we place certain actors to make sure that we are creating a representative cast of, you know, what the world looks like? And I think sometimes it's really difficult. And people get nervous about casting actors of any ethnicity in certain roles, and what the connotations of what that are going to be, and like what that says more widely about what they're creating. But I think what you're saying is like, well, that is the answer, that the characters are developed in different ways more so. So it doesn't feel tokenistic, and it doesn't feel like things have just been put in and there's no representation of what that person is actually like, and actually their characteristic, or, you know, part of them being there might be a racial thing, right? It's really interesting, and I come, like everything I work on, it's always a question that we need to make sure that we're being mindful of.
Because, you know, for Mimi Cave, white director, to make Noah a woman of colour, or to make Steve a man of colour, like, what does that say? To make them both people of colour, what does that say? Like, I don't know if that is really correct, but yeah, I think, you know, the development.
I wonder if she did want to cast either of them as people of colour, but for like financing reasons couldn't, because there's not as many A-list, like, big actors who are people of color, and that's just like the horrific part of our industry.
But if it was the first like option, that there's a nervousness around the connotation that it brings if those two lead characters are non-white, then I think we do need to get uncomfortable in that nervousness and have real conversations about it. Because like I'm working on something at the moment, and it's the same thing, you know, with funding. Who are we going to have attached that's going to then market this project in the way that the, you know, studio needs it to be, you know, marketed? And is this, let's just do it. I mean, that's not a great like response to that, but like, let's just do it.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting what you were saying, Larry, about there not being so many actors who are of like a certain celebrity that are people of color, because it just, you know, the opportunities are smaller. But we've recently had the news that Shuti has been cast as the new Doctor. And I actually haven't really seen Sex Education, but like he is a supporting role and he like assists the lead character who's a white man. And like, but it's now actually opened this like incredible door for him. So I think like it does all count. Like it is all important. But yeah, it's like, it's so nice to see opportunities like that where it really does kind of like break through something that's just been like set in its ways for a long time.
Totally. And I actually think some of the best scenes in the last series are where we go with him to where his family is from when we learn more about that character. And that was directed by Rania Raro Matfumo. She's an incredible director. She just was nominated for Breakthrough at BAFTA Awards. But like this, like I want to see that. And that got really incredible feedback that we went and saw like his environment and his like upbringing and heritage and all that stuff on the screen. So yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully we're on the way. We're on track to making it happen.
Because I want to see what JoJo does next, because I think she was incredible. So have you guys got any awful online dating stories?
Oh my God, I love it. This is why I'm on this podcast.
No, I haven't been on any online dates. I'm really boring.
Have you, Maze?
No, I've never done it.
I don't know that you could.
No, sorry. I forgot.
I've done a lot of catfishing. no, I my friend Bill, making another feature, he was on Bumble for a bit and I loved swiping for him. But then I was like, what does this say about me? I was just like, yeah, no, no, yeah, no, no, no. It was like, it's kind of messed up in a way, but it was like it brought me a lot of endorphins.
Yeah, no, the endorphins are real. I'll just briefly tell a story. So I went on a date with this guy. It was a first date, and we went for a drink, and anyway, I could just tell it wasn't going right. He started singing in my face at one point and I was like, okay, this is really embarrassing. Like, he wanted to be a singer sort of thing. Then he was like, oh, there's a place across the road, we should go there. I walk in, he's like, hey man, like giving everyone high fives and all, and I'm just like, okay. Anyway, it's an open mic night. He proceeds to get up on stage and sing four songs. It was like he was doing a performance. And then he came to me at the end and I was just sat there in the back, like recording, like sending to my friends, like, what is going on? I'd not long moved to London as well. So it just was just like, this is the vibe here. And he came back and he said, you weren't dancing. And I was like, oh, mate.
Oh, my God.
How many girls have you done that to? Wasn't for me.
That is so funny.
It's so fun. But I love that element. And like, I've got some wicked stories from my friends as well, and I live for it. And now we're all over the age of doing that. I miss it terribly. Mm-hmm. I love the stories.
So interesting that they didn't meet online. And I wondered if like it was also trying to say that like meeting people in person isn't actually that good a thing nowadays as well, because you might get chopped up. But I was like, I wonder if it was trying to say anything like that.
Maybe it was like that was lulling her into a false sense of security because she didn't meet him online. And that was his tactic.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not safe. Never safe.
But when they first had their first date, I really loved their acting, Daisy's in particular, in the way that they were like, when they were talking, her language really, really changed to how it was in the rest of the film. And she was like really like encouraging, you know how you like kind of go to finish someone's sentence and you're like, it's like really encouraging conversation and like really try hard conversation. I thought they did that so well. Like, I was finding it kind of cringe, but was also like, oh my God, I just know this conversation so well. And I really loved that. I thought that was really good.
It's true. It's the sort of thing, like, when you watch it and you do kind of get butterflies and it's like, oh, that's so annoying because, like, this is so stupid. But it's, like, the sort of thing that just kind of works. And, like, even if it's just fleeting and you walk away and, like, that's it, like, you will think about, you know, that interaction for the rest of the evening or like whatever. When someone's just like slick like that and like self-deprecating but also like charming and like, but so do you think then if you'd have gone on that date, like, do you think you would have been won over?
I would, yeah, definitely. I mean, Sebastian. Sebastian Stan.
Yeah, 100%. Would you?
Well, I wouldn't know because I'm in a relationship, so...
Sure. Sorry about that. No.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
That was a test. Bloody hell.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now it's time for In the Club.
Welcome back to In the Club, the portion of the show where we get to chat with someone from the movie that we are discussing. And today we are really lucky to be joined by the incredible Daisy Edgar-Jones, who is a BAFTA and Golden Globe nominated actress. She starred as Marianne in the television adaptation of Normal People and has since carved out a career in film, television and theatre. Fresh premiered at Sundance earlier this year, and we are so lucky to have her with us. So Daisy, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so pleased to have you. We were just saying the last time we saw each other was at the Met Gala. How was it? How did you find it? It's a bit bonkers.
It was totally bonkers, and I think because it was like so unbelievable to me that I was there, I sort of felt like I slightly dissociated for the whole experience. I was like not really in my body. I was like watching myself from afar. It was just mad. How did you find it?
I mean, yes, equally surreal. It's like the Met Gala itself is so bizarre that you just like get through it. And then the after parties end up being kind of fun. And I wanted to meet up with you, but I don't know which one you went to. Whereabouts did you go?
We sort of like we kind of went to all of them. Like we would go at the like tail end of one and then like run to the other, and that would be finishing. It was like chasing the best night. We ended up at the box at the end of the night, and that was really fun.
Oh, that sounds like fun. I was actually on my way to the box, and then I realized that my flight was taking off very soon, and so I had to go and get my suitcase and go straight to the airport, and everyone on the flight was just passed out with like their hair and makeup still on, like sleeping.
Oh my gosh.
So that sounds like a lot of fun. And this past year has been, or over a year, has been so incredible for you. And we have just loved watching your career go from strength to strength. But I wonder, like, how have you found it? What have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about this industry?
It really has been a really sort of, a year of growth for me in the sense that, you know, Normal People, that came out obviously during the pandemic, and that was my first sort of lead part in anything, and it was so surreal, the experience of that coming out, because, you know, I was kind of being told that it was doing well and that it was in some way life changing, but I had no sort of actual real life experience of that other than sitting on Zoom the whole time, and so then to then sort of go away last year and work job to job, and it, you know, it was an amazing experience, and I was kind of like really wanting to push myself and work out kind of like, yeah, what kind of actor I wanted to be and what choices I wanted to make and also whether I could kind of do anything different. You know, I mean, I'd never had a chance to stretch myself the way I did with Normal People, so it was again a kind of new learning experience to stretch myself in different ways.
Love it. I really want to know about your process for accents, because I think when normal people came out, everyone, including me, was so shocked that you weren't Irish. And obviously that your accents are flawless, basically. So I just, has that always been something that you've had a good ear for, or do you have a really good coach that you always work with?
Yeah, well, I have a lot of accents in my house. I grew up with, my mum's Northern Irish and my dad's Scottish. And I lived with my granddad for a very long time. He had a very strong Northern Irish accent. So we all like speak in accents to like in the house. I grew up in North London. My accent's very neutral, but I found it very interesting watching like my friends from primary school go, like their accents became like a particular type of North London accent, and it's funny, I really realized that accents are so not just like in the music of the voice, but really in a physicality. Like there's a certain physicality to a particular North London accent that I know so well, and I found that very interesting. And especially with the Irish, there's a humor and like a rhythm to it that's very specific to an Irish sound. And same with like an American confidence. There's an inherent confidence to an American voice that's just so different to the British, which is so naturally self-conscious or sarcastic and like inward. So I just have to sort of spend a lot of time with people who have that accent, and then I like pick it up. Yeah,
and I feel like going on to Fresh has been a complete tonal shift from anything that we have kind of seen you do before. You came to this project before Sebastian, and I saw that he attached himself once he knew that you were attached, which is always, I think, incredible. But what was it that initially drew you to this project?
My agent sent me Fresh, and they didn't really tell me much about it. They were just like, a slight warning. it's a little graphic. And I was like, I wonder what it's about. But like, I just couldn't believe what I was reading, because every time I thought I knew where it was going, it went like somewhere even more surreal and absurd. And I loved it too, because they'd written a really brilliant sort of, Lauren, our writer, had written great 80s like ballads throughout. And I'm a big fan of 80s music. And she wrote like, one of the first songs that she wrote in was Gloria. I don't know if you know that song. It's like, Gloria. And he's like chopping up a human being. And I was like, what the frig is this? And I found it really funny, but also it was prefaced with sort of that it was going to be a social thriller. So I was like, okay, it's got something deeper to say. And, I really found like, especially certain scenes where it's sort of discussing like the commodification of women's bodies, and also just the female experience of like dating and how and the risk involved with that. And I just thought it was really cool. So I kind of fell in love with it when I read it.
Yeah, it's such an incredible film. I watched it with Hannah. We watched it together. And it was so good. It was just, as you say, when you're watching it, it's like you think it's going one way and then you're like, what the fuck? What has just happened? So when you came onto the project, or like, did you get any input on the script, or was it pretty much that was it and then you shot it?
It's a tricky story, because you sort of it does go to such an absurd place that you actually, whenever you can, have to really try and root it in truth. And so, you know, it was finding the right scenes to do that. And and Mimi, our director, she's a first-time filmmaker and had previously sort of worked in music videos. And so visually she had such a kind of idea of the story and really allowed us to, Sebastian and I and Jojo as well, who played Molly, and everyone really, she cast kind of a lot of, like Jojo is a stand-up comedian, and like she cast a lot of actors who were really sort of comfortable in improv. So she really allowed us to be free with the script, which was so much fun. I mean, kind of scary, because I'd learnt the accent with those lines, so I was like, oh, I don't know if I can like riff in that way. But but she really allowed us to be free, and we worked a lot on the script and had a lot of input.
A lot of improv then with some of the scenes, which is really interesting to know. I didn't know that. And it really shows. It feels very fluid. And the relationships that you have, especially with Jojo and her character, is just so lovely. That's a note that we spoke about quite a bit when we were watching it. Did you have much rehearsal time then? Because you shot in Canada for 6 weeks, right?
We were actually all had to quarantine for 2 weeks before we started filming. So we were all like alone in a hotel room in Vancouver just with this script, which is a bit of an odd experience. Jojo and I did some boxing rehearsal, which I'm sure you can tell when you watch those scenes. So good at that. But yeah, we had a bit of rehearsal. And then sort of throughout, because it was such a fast shoot, like Sebastian and I would spend a lot of time on the weekends, like working on scenes ahead of the week, because when it came to the day, like we had really complicated camera moves and things and we didn't really have a lot of time. So that was really nice. So we were kind of constantly rehearsing as we went. It's funny with sets, like the camera department, the sound department, there's a real sort of sense of like a team. But I sometimes find with like acting, it feels like there's no acting department, which is strange to me. Like there should be, and there should be a sort of sense of like unified, like we're a group here getting through this together. And so I found that really cool of like, okay, well, we don't have time on set, so let's make time for ourselves and we'll work it out when we can. And we'll really be a unit. And that was really helpful.
Yeah, I imagine it can get quite lonely sometimes. I think everyone can go off and do their own preparation or their own, you know. But it's so nice that you were able to do that. And I think it really does come across in the film. When you were creating Noah, you mentioned sort of being in isolation and then some boxing. I mean, we have to get into the stunt fight at the end because it's just incredible. But what sort of things what tools do you use to like get in and out of character? Like, I'm sure there were days on set that were a lot of fun, but days that were also quite, you know, complex emotionally. So do you have any kind of techniques that you like to use?
I can't stay in a moment too long. So I like to be like really silly before like, and take as much sort of time to have levity during the filming day as possible. So like playing music in the trailer and stuff like that. I find it far easier to sort of do things in short bursts, like go into that scene for that burst of time and then come right out of it. And this was nice because actually often, especially in the first half of the film, you know, you can sort of glide quite seamlessly from like being silly into the scenes because they have that lightness to them. But then, you know, but also being respectful of like other people's processes if they need to have their space. And also like having a separation of accent really helps me. I much prefer acting in an accent. I really hate acting in my own voice because I feel really embarrassed when I'm like doing scenes in my own voice. So that was helpful of like dropping into someone different because her voice was so different to mine.
I relate to that a lot. I love doing accents in things. I think for that same reason, I hate my own voice. So starting a podcast.
Kind of following on from that then, because obviously like you think it's just like a fun rom-com and then turns into like this gory revenge horror. But how did that shift work with you? Because obviously like carrying the same character and being true to that same character in those two very different worlds, that must be quite a challenge.
We were lucky because we filmed the first half first. So we had like 2 weeks of just having fun. And then we filmed the end, like in the woods. That was a week of night shoots. And then we filmed all the house stuff. So we had like this big chunk of the story missing, which was the middle of it. And I think the middle was the most challenging thing to get right because, and that was something we had lots of conversations about. And like Sebastian and I would talk a lot about, because you have to believe that Sebastian's character, Steve, believes Noah. Like, and trying to like plot those details of how she manipulates him in a really subtle way that doesn't, was really tricky. So we worked on and that changed quite a lot.
Speaking then about how you and Sebastian sort of discovered that and the tone of that manipulation, we have seen a little bit of criticism, I mean, it's always the way, but of Noah's decision to go along, you know, go away for the weekend. And I just wonder about what sort of discussions you were having with Mimi and the writer maybe about intentions and how those are going to be read in the film and what you think about it as well, because, yeah, we have thoughts.
I noticed that too, and I thought that was so interesting. And I mean, when I met with Mimi before, when we were talking about the script, I was like, okay, so it's a social thriller. Like, what does that mean? So what are the deeper messages of this film? Which you know, I had my ideas, and we talked a lot about. I don't know if you've ever read Women Who Run with the Wolves. I don't know if you know that book. It's sort of all about female instinct and about how like the wild in us that like has these really acute senses, like how somebody can say, hey, how are you in a bar? And you can feel really comfortable. And someone can say, hey, how are you in a bar? And for some reason, you feel really like creeped out. And what that is, and how so often we like have that instinct or that little tingle, and we out of politeness or out of wanting to be amiable, ignore it and push it away. when I read it, like this idea of like dating, how we're trying to navigate that feeling, and with Steve, how is there a sense that Noah has a little bit of that, but she's also like so wanting to just push it down and be like, no, it's fine. And you know, I mean, he's a master manipulator, and he's funny. He's like very self-deprecating. Like he talks about how he's a doctor. Like he puts all these little, you know, pointers in her mind that make her go, okay, he's safe. And she's gone back with him and nothing's happened. And so, you know, I kind of wanted to plot that, like, there were little moments of like hesitation, or like when she first gets in the car, but she's like, no, it's fine. I'm not going to let myself be scared. And, you know, it's just funny that people sort of judge her for going back with him instead of judging him for being a cannibal, which isn't great, you know?
Whenever there's, you know, whenever there's a real case like this, or, you know, a picture which, like, you know, depicts this sort of scenario, we're always quick to throw out advice for women and what women need to do. And it's always just so tone deaf, because none of it really works. And if the person that you're, like, you know, interacting with is completely disingenuous and like you can't trust anything. She did everything she could. She texted her friend, which ultimately saved her life. And it's like, that's the best advice that we have. Like, what more? Yeah. On a bit of a lighter note, the fight scene, we talk about this a lot, and we watch a lot of films with big fight sequences, or like shooting, or like whatever. And like, there's a piece of that that just makes me kind of switch off. But like, watching these three women take down Steve was like, I was like, I get it. I love this. This is incredible. What was that like to choreograph, and also to, you know, to shoot?
That was a really fun day of filming, because what I loved about it was it's so truthfully scrappy. Like, it's so messy. They're not going to be very good at like taking down this fully grown man, but the fact that they just like, it's like that survival thing. And obviously Sebastian is like, had huge amounts of experience in action because he is in the Marvel verse. So he, we had like a sort of stunt day, and he was really good at sort of like suggesting things and guiding things. But it was all about just making it as messy and believable as possible. Like, you know, okay, there's a knife there, she'd grab it. Like, you just use anything you could, you know, and it not look at all choreographed in that way. So yeah, it was just hilarious. Like, when Penny like drops out of the like food shoot, and she like, it just really makes me laugh every time I watch it.
Well, I was just gonna say, we've spoken a bit about the social message of it, and there's so many lines in there and moments like the keys in the hand, and give us a smile at the end. I was like, God, that is such a good catchphrase for the film. But what would you like people to take away from the film?
There's so much that you can sort of take from it. And I feel like everyone's experience of it will be very different. Like, people will watch it and just be very entertained and not even get anything deeper. But I think the thing that, one of the things I'm most proud of is that female friendship. And, you know, we so often put so much like weight in film and TV on romantic partnership, but actually like the like fierce love of a best friend is so beautiful to experience, and will last you a lifetime if it's true, but also to watch on screen. So I think that friendship is one I'm really proud of, and I want to see, like, especially female friendships. I think there's something very unique about them. So just women like helping other women and not judging them for going with, you know, a bloke somewhere. Like, just women just helping other and supporting other women, I think, is really important to see more of on screen.
Well, something we really loved, me and Larry, when we're watching it, is that the ex-boyfriend doesn't save the day.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, because it definitely felt like it was going that way, you know? And I kind of also did really like him, but then love that he just fucked off.
That he's just like, nah, like, absolutely yeah. Not. I know, because that's also like probably really truthful. Like, probably yeah. What would happen? You hear a gunshot and you're like, no, I shouldn't, that's not worth it.
Before you go, we'd love to chat a little bit about Crawdads. We are just obsessed with the trailer, and you're going to be playing Kaya in the screen adaptation. For anyone who is listening who may or may not have read the book, what can you tell us about this film?
Where the Crawdads Sing is is a story about a young girl who sort of survives on her own in the marsh in North Carolina in the 50s, I think it's that, against all odds. And it's sort of a story about resilience. And she's on trial for the murder of a young man who lives in the town. It was interesting doing an adaptation that's a studio film, like a studio, because normal people felt like an indie. It was for TV, but it felt very much like Lenny is an indie director. You know, that's where he started, and it felt very much that way. Like, so doing an adaptation for a studio film felt very different, and like the scope and the scale of it was one that I've never experienced. You know, and I'm very fascinated by camera and choice of sort of lens and angle and it was interesting. You know, I've never worked with something that had so many like rigs and cranes and like big scopic shots, and I guess because the camera almost, I feel like, flies through the film like a bird, like, and that makes sense for the story. So, but yeah, I found that very, very interesting just being on something of that scale. I was like, oh, bloody hell. That was an interesting experience.
So we've seen you in like very different characters now. What other characters are you now interested in exploring?
I think I'd like to next to play like a real character. Like, I'd love to play a Steve. Like, I'd love to play someone who, you know, is a real character. Like, they are. I've done a lot of like realism in a way, and I liked the absurdist and the dark humor of Fresh, and I got to do a bit of that. But yeah, someone who's just larger than life and like a real character would be very fun.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear about your process, and we've loved having you join us to chat about Fresh, and perhaps we'll have you back to chat about Crawdads in the next series, because it's so wonderful to hear you chat.
Thank you. And next time we'll actually meet up at a party somewhere and have a bop, all of us, which would be fun.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, what were your final thoughts?
I really found merit in watching a film that is just pure entertainment. And I feel like this, for me, was what it was, especially because of how tired I was and, it just was entertainment. And this conversation has really made me think a lot more about the choices that were made in the film. And I've really enjoyed speaking a lot about casting, and I've really enjoyed speaking with Daisy, and I think she is incredible, incredible actress. Love her even more now.
Yeah, I also really love speaking with Daisy. I really love this film, and I want to watch it again, and I'm so shocked that I loved a horror.
Yeah.
Because that's surprising. I just can't deal with spooks, but this isn't a spooks film. These chats have been really, really good, and I feel like I am now questioning parts of it, but I still fully love it and actually really can't wait to see what Mimi Cave does next, and Daisy too.
Yeah, I completely agree. So wonderful to be able to hear you guys chat about it, to be able to speak with Daisy. It definitely feels like a rewatchable film, and we don't get many of those on the podcast, so for that reason, yeah, I'm very pleased that we got to do this. And for our final episode.
What a way to finish.
Oh, I know.
Sad.
I'm very sad. Mm.
We'll be back very soon.
We will, yeah. We'll take a little bit of time. But if you guys have any suggestions for the films that you want to see or the guests that you want us to chat with, then please send us an email, filmclub@rap.world, or shoot us a message on Instagram at Frank Film Club, and we'd be more than happy to consider it for our fourth series. Thank you so much, both of you. I've loved doing this series.
Me too. And thank you to Frankie, who edits our podcast. Thank you to Tamara, who works with us and helps book all our lovely guests.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This podcast was presented by Wrapped.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.